With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from The New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich.
This week, we're going to be talking about the new season of Broad City and the crime thriller film Wind River.
We've also listened to the music of Russian prog folk duo I Am The Morning, so we'll be talking about how that went later in the show.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. Normal programming resumes after last week's live episode, which was a first for Seriously, wasn't it, Caroline?
It was indeed. And I hope you all enjoyed it as much as we did, both the people who made it to the London Podcast Festival and also those of you who listened via the podcast afterwards. As I think I said in the one before, I was a little bit like, will anyone want to listen to us do this, but more rambling and less edited? Yeah. It turns out you did. So thank you very much for that.
But yeah, it was great fun. Really, really great fun to do. And thanks everyone who listened online.
We don't really have any more events coming up, having been plugging super hard all summer. Yeah. We are now free of plugging, hurrah. But, you know, we'll probably do some more stuff in the future, maybe in 2018 or something, if you haven't got to see us so far.
Totally. And we do, of course, continue with our Seriously quizzes. What will the next quiz be? Stay tuned to find out, but it will happen.
Who can say? If you have strong feelings about something you'd like us to do, this is the period in which we decide, so get in touch and let us know.
Yeah, and it will be early November, I suppose, early to mid-November.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Exciting.
I had a really good email from Jifa, apologies if I'm not saying your name right, who got in touch to share a problematic fave. It starts all caps, Azalea Banks, and goes, hear me out. She's the trashiest of trash humans and racist, misogynist, self-hating, homophobic, Islamophobic, etc., etc. But the 1991 EP Fantasia and Broke With Expensive Taste are incredible records and the soundtracks to my 20s, and I just can't give them up.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, that is the very definition of a problematic fave.
That was a long list in that email.
It was, yeah.
Mm. Oh, well, that's a great email. Thank you so much. The first thing we're going to talk about this week is the fourth season of Broad City, the American comedy series. It's on Comedy Central in the UK, I think in the US as well, actually. And it stars Ilana Glazer and Abby Jacobson as two best friends who are kind of navigating a struggling millennial creative life in New York City, as cliched as that sounds.
So this is series four of Broad City, right?
It is. So it's been on almost 4 years. I think it started in like January of 2014. And they're quite short seasons normally, aren't they? They're kind of like 10 episode seasons. They're not, you know, like a Parks and Rec season or an Office season that get into the kind of like 25s. Mm. But it's a substantial amount of episodes for a kind of half hour comedy.
It's interesting, actually, that it doesn't have huge numbers of episodes. It's been incredibly influential, both on me, if that doesn't sound really grandiose, but also just on comedy generally.
Totally.
A bit like, in a totally different way, how people always cite Fawlty Towers as one of the greatest sitcoms of all time, but there are only 12 episodes of Fawlty Towers ever made.
Yeah.
You know, that sometimes something that's really, really good does not have to be massive in quantity to have an impact.
Totally, but it's not. It's also, it's kind of a difficult one, this show, isn't it? Because although things like Friends run and run and run, and they kind of have like slightly bizarro plots, but I don't know. I feel like there's there's room for repetition in something like Friends where there's perhaps not in something like Broad City, because the plots are very, very ridiculous. They always revolve around Abby and Alana getting into some kind of very farcical, very bizarre situation, which might be like Abby hallucinating in Whole Foods with like a giant bear creature, or it might be them like going on an elaborate search for a missing iPhone and coming across all these weird things in New York City. So you want to be surprised by this show every time. You don't want to be like, oh, Ross is angry again. You want to be like, yeah, what the hell is going to happen this week?
So I liked very much the first episode of this fourth series, which is called Sliding Doors, mm-hmm, which has that kind of, I even want to call it like buildings romance style, where we like watch them go on a journey and grow. But it's more formally complicated than just that, because there's two separate timelines running in alternate scenes and we're kind of crossing from one into the other. And it is a literal sliding doors moment. It flashes back to 2011 when Abby and Alana first met. Both times they meet each other in a subway station for the first time. In one of them, they make it onto the train, and in the other version, they don't make it onto the train. And it just unfolds from there each ways as to what happened. Yeah. I almost don't want to say what happens because it packs a real punch when you're watching it. But yeah, there are twists and turns along the way, let's just say.
Totally. And it's kind of like, what if we had hit it off from the beginning and what if we hadn't, sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's so it's like a parody of the Gwyneth Paltrow Sliding Doors movie, where like in one scenario she makes it on the train and realizes her husband's a dick, and in another she doesn't. And it's playing with that idea, but in a way that is very Broad City and does still manage to surprise you. I loved that episode. It was fun to kind of go, I mean, sometimes I think when these comedies try to bring in a political element, which they do a little bit in that episode and in another one that I've seen, it can feel a bit much. So there are a couple of moments in that episode, because it's set in 2011, where, like, I don't know, someone on the street, you realise is saying Donald Trump will be president, but backwards.
Yeah, that made me laugh, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah, maybe. And there's another bit where, I don't know, where they're like, oh, really, really hopeful about the political trajectory of America, because they're like, wow, we've got an amazing president and it's just the beginning. But there are bits that I just really loved about it. I liked the way that they bonded over things. There's a moment where Alana's like, you know what I've been thinking about lately? And Abby's like, what? And she's like, why you're not allowed to have eggs after 11 anywhere? And she's like, oh my god, I think about all that all the time. And it's one of those great relatable Broad City friend moments. And I also found it really moving that they used this song by a duo called Cults, which the song's called Go Outside, and it was massive in 2011, or it was amongst a certain kind of like indie pop circle. And I remember listening to that with all my friends in 2011, and I felt really like weirdly emotional when it came on. And I was like, oh, this is like the beginning of their friendship, and I've had these moments, and it just felt really nice to me. So I liked the kind of the friendship vibe of that first episode. Then the second episode is called Twaining Day, and it's basically their cameo episode, which they seem to have every season now.
Yes.
It's also the kind of like workplace episode. So Abby has a new job, but has to go back to her old place of work, the Solstice Gym, that's been in lots of episodes. And she sees Shania Twain there, and it's all about her like trying to, you know, work alongside Shania Twain whilst also seeing some old faces that she used to work with. And Alana gets a new job as a mean waitress in some kind of like almost upmarket Manhattan restaurant. And RuPaul of RuPaul's Drag Race, for which there have been contestant cameos in Broad City before, he's like the maitre d', I guess, and he's the one who's in charge of trying to make her work hard and be mean to customers and stuff. For me, again, I feel like once you've had Hillary Clinton on your show, no one else really matches up. You can like see the writing of the episodes around the cameos, rather than being like, oh, we could slot this actress into this great plot. It feels a lot more like, okay, we're going to write these famous people who've agreed to be on our show into it in this kind of elaborate way. But I did like that they kept it all in one episode, so it wasn't like we had the RuPaul episode and the Shania Twain episode and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that does work. Yeah, I wasn't a massive fan of Shania Twain in this. I felt like she very much did the sort of celebrity being in a thing.
She did the best she could, I think.
Yeah.
Which sounds mean, but I don't mean it to sound mean. We've seen some more episodes that haven't aired yet. I've seen one that is very political, and there's a whole plot line around basically Alana having difficulty reaching orgasm since Trump's been elected. And I have said this before on Seriously, I have a problem with any art that references anything current and political, which I know is my, my problem and not the problem of art, but I always find it really on the nose when people start referencing Trump and stuff. And I mean, and that's not my, like a weird kind of creepy way of me being like, things don't need to be political. Like, I don't think this Trump guy is so bad. Like, obviously I hate Trump as much as the next person, but I just found the way it was done, I don't know, I can never organise my thoughts on this properly, but I just found it a bit unsubtle and a bit overdone.
Yeah, it was very, it was both those things. It was unsubtle and overdone, but I liked that in this particular case. I think sometimes you get that effect in other shows that try and do this kind of commentary. But I thought the fact that Broad City positioned the political storyline with Ilana, the more over the top of the two characters anyway, and gave it to her in a kind of semi-farcical masturbation storyline,
That's
essentially
true.
I found that really funny.
There were lots of things, though, that I did really like about this new season. I think, for me, this is always the case with Broad City. Some of the funniest lines are kind of, like, weirdly throwaway.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. As a result, I find it quite hard to quote them or find them.
Yeah. So there's an episode where, because Alana's got this new waitressing job, she's got loads of spending money. And she's, like, getting her nails done in a nail salon. And she says to the person doing her nails, she's like, listen, I read that terrible New York Times headline about the exploited salon workers, and I want to make sure that you get this money, not the owner. And the person doing her nails, who looks Asian, is like, I am the owner. And it's this great line because it satirizes so much in one thing. Like the fact that she says headline instead of article, because obviously yes. Alana isn't reading the articles. It's like, you know, satirizing attention spans and millennial reading habits, but also like casual racism, like her assumptions about this person, and like white guilt, like the fact that she's like unable to just like have a normal interaction with this person. All there's so much going on in that one line, and it's barely acknowledged. And that's the kind of really great writing in Broad City for me.
And then after it happens, she kind of sits back in the chair going, white guilt,
yeah,
white guilt. Like just singing it to herself.
Which is a classic, another classic Alana kind of thing. Mm. And it, there's been episodes like that in the earlier seasons. Like there's one where Alana is like, literally, she's managed to get some sort of weird belt physically chained to her. And she's sat there talking about like how women in Saudi Arabia practically live in chains. But she's like literally living in chains because she's an idiot. It's so funny. Yeah, I really like those kinds of things that are more kind of taking the piss out of what the audience of Broad City can sometimes be a bit like, which... yeah, I really, really enjoy.
And I have to say, I did wonder with Series 4 of Broad City how much more of it they can make, in the sense that how much more kind of millennial satire can there be? But I was actually pleasantly surprised, I guess maybe because it's the best and it's the original, that actually they don't do capital M, capital S, millennial satire in the way that say something like Search Party does a bit more.
Yeah, totally.
It's there almost as like background static, or as you say, like in that one line, but there's no like heavy-handed references to Instagram or people wearing pink or any of the things that lesser examples of this format do.
Totally. And they're real characters, like they're idiots, and when they fuck up, yeah, it's both relatable and also not considered a comment on like young people, because they are very specific characters that you've got to know over a long period of time. And when Abby makes a joke about how much she loves Bed Bath and Beyond, you feel part of that in joke because you've been watching the show so long. It's not just like, oh, millennials love Bed Bath and Beyond. There's more to it than that. I completely agree.
I love how internally referential it is, actually. Like, what was the name of the place that she had to go to collect the parcel in that
episode, the place that it's not Staten Island, it's some kind of island.
It's one of the islands, yeah. And that was referenced just really in the Twaining Day episode, when the person rings up who's delivering her parcel to her old office, and he's like, well, either you can come pick it up, or I've got to take it to such and such an island. She's like, no, I can never go back there.
Exactly. It's great.
It does reward binge watching, I feel, this show.
Totally. And their performances are just so funny. Like, they're great comic actors, and I love watching them. So I'll keep watching the whole series and many more seasons to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll watch as many as they make, basically. 4 and 3 and 2 and 1, 1.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Now we're going to talk about Wind River, which is a thriller film set in Wyoming near an Indian reservation from which it takes its title. It's written and directed by Taylor Sheridan, and it stars Jeremy Renner as a hunter called Corey, who gets involved in a murder case of a woman that he knows.
Sheriff's office.
I need emergency assistance.
What's your location?
The Wind River Indian Reservation.
I'm Jane Banner, FBI.
Welcome to Wyoming. You by yourself?
It's just me.
That's Corey Lambert. He's the one who found the body.
This is a homicide.
I knew that girl. She's a fighter.
They have 6 officers to cover an area the size of Rhode Island. Maybe you can help.
Well, I know what the tracks say.
What is it that you do again?
I hunt predators.
So why don't you come hunt one for me then? Why would a teenage girl be out here? What is she running from?
You're looking for clues, but you're missing all the signs.
Shouldn't we wait for backup?
This isn't the land of backup, Jane. This is a land of you're on your own.
Watch the back!
Oh my God.
Yeah, so I saw this film when I was in America a few weeks ago, and it's kind of a strange one because it's like part murder mystery, part kind of social investigation into kind of like racism and the specific plight of a group of Native American people in a very, very remote reserve. And it's kind of lots of things at once, I would say.
Yeah, so I was not really familiar at all with the work of Taylor Sheridan, who is an actor who's quite recently got into screenwriting. Apparently, you can see this as the third of a trilogy of films of what I think one critic called like thrillers with a social conscience.
Mm.
And the other two are Sicario and Hell or High Water, neither of which I've seen, I have to say.
No, I know about both of them.
I am actually now interested to see them based on that. I remember seeing the trailer for Sicario. It's got Emily Blunt in, I think, and thinking, oh, this does look maybe like something I would watch, but then did not watch it. So he's said in interviews that he was inspired to do the film when he learned about the fact that the FBI does not record like missing person or homicide statistics for Native American women.
Right.
So therefore no one knows like how many of them are missing, or you know, no one cares.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was what kind of prompted him to formulate a story that actually tells you what happened to at least one of them.
Right, which is, it is totally a really terrible situation and something I didn't know about before I saw the movie. And that does come up at the end, doesn't it? Just before the credits roll, there's some kind of text that gives you that information.
And apparently that's why at the very beginning it says this is based on real events or something. What he means by that is not there was a case in a place in Wyoming mm-hmm. that involves these characters, but just that there are loads of stories like this probably, but we just don't know.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure lots of people can tell you these stories without them necessarily being officially recorded.
Yeah. You know, and the kind of story we're referring to, for anyone who hasn't seen the film, is it's about Corey, the hunter played by Jeremy Renner, who you might know from the Hawkeye character in the Avengers universe. He, in the course of like looking for a predator who's been attacking people's livestock, finds the body of a young Native American woman, and he then basically assists the FBI investigator who comes to look into it, who's played by Elizabeth Olsen. He assists her in trying to find out what happens. One side note I just have to say is that I basically wasn't aware of Elizabeth Olsen as a thing, and I spent the entire film being like, she looks so much like the Olsen twins.
No way.
Who is this? Is this one of the Olsen twins who's had a lot of plastic surgery? And then I googled it afterwards. I was like, no, it's just their sister.
Oh, I did an Elizabeth Olsen double bill on the day that I saw this. I saw this and then Ingrid Goes West, which we must do on Seriously at some point.
Because she's got two films out really close together,
hasn't she? Yeah, we literally went into the cinema and came out after seeing two Elizabeth Olsen movies, which was great. But yeah, so that's that dynamic that you're talking about between the two leads in this movie was part of the problem that I had with this movie, because I've seen lots of people more qualified than me to speak to this particular issue writing about how the lead hunter character is sort of used as like the white voice to get you into this Native American community.
I was very conscious of that the whole time. And I was like, for the whole time that he's talking about how important it is that people like respect the reservation and respect the people on it, and that, you know, women, well, that whole speech he makes at the end where he's like, you know, women survive because they're strong and all this kind of stuff. I was like, why are you saying this? Why couldn't any of the female characters in this have said this?
Yeah, and none of the Native American women are really given a voice in this movie at all.
Mm.
Even the ones that are kind of like main characters all kinds of reasons, not actually voicing what's happened to them or what's happened to their family or anything. And also there are a few lines, this is one of our pet hates on Seriously, is when male writers get women to say things like, hey, I'm not just a stereotype. And there are a couple of lines in this that verge on that territory, which are like, you know, Native American characters saying to these white people, like, you don't understand our culture. And it's like, cool, but neither do we, the audience, because we're not given that perspective. Mm-hmm. We're given the perspective of these two leads. And I understand the need to have the white FBI character. If you're going to talk about the way that the FBI are not engaging with this problem, then yeah, you do need that character. And fair enough if they're one of the main ones. But the hunter character, he's kind of there to both mansplain the wilderness to this woman and like say mm-hmm. like, this is how you get through the snow and stuff, and this is what this means, but also in doing that silence the voices of other people who really know the land that they're on really well and like know the specifics of the relationships in the community that might lead to a woman's death, all this kind of stuff. He both speaks over the Native American characters and speaks down to the women characters, so you're a bit like, I don't like this dynamic at all.
I thought it was a real missed opportunity that, because so part of the story is that the hunter's ex-wife, who is a Native American woman, she appears a few times mostly to like shut the door in his face and stuff. So it was a real missed opportunity not to have her be a bigger role in it.
Totally, exactly.
Because it's like, here's a ready-made character who could have got drawn into the investigation, who could have forged a, hey, what do you know, a woman sort of professional dynamic with the FBI
totally.
Investigator. You know, she could have been a really big part of it, and she just wasn't.
Yeah.
She wasn't in like the last hour of the film.
Which are all things that, by the way, I feel like films get this kind of stuff wrong all the time, and maybe we're being unfair for singling out this movie, but it feels so specifically like it was made with some of those goals in mind that it's a shame that it didn't achieve them.
Yeah, when I was thinking about it when I was walking out of the cinema, maybe this is a bit harsh on Taylor Sheridan. Maybe I'm, as you say, maybe I'm being unduly harsh on him because he actually tried.
Yeah.
But this is very much a white man's version of this story.
Totally.
And yeah, I'm being extra critical on him because he actually put his head above the parapet and tried to do something that wasn't literally like a bro white dude film.
Mm.
But, you know, the very fact that he tries maybe suggests that he wants to be better.
Yeah.
So it's worthwhile saying these things. But that said,
talking about it though, just as a murder mystery, everything else aside, I also found it weird kind of from that perspective because there aren't that many suspects. You know, what's happened is this woman's body has appeared in the snow in the middle of nowhere and they don't understand how she could have got there or what happened to her, but it's clear that she's been raped and that's basically all they know. There are never very many suspects given. You kind of have to figure out who or what happened fairly quickly. It's quite tense. There's a lot of action. And then halfway through the film, you find out what happened to her. And then the other half...
Yeah, they show us in a flashback.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so the mystery element is over halfway in. And then the rest of the film is kind of dealing with the fallout of that. But I know that it's bad to be like, well, I couldn't fit this film into a category in my mind and therefore I couldn't possibly enjoy it. And, you know, it's good for things to break stereotypes sometimes. But for me, it was like neither one thing or another, which stopped it from excelling at either, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think that's fair. I felt similarly. I was very surprised when suddenly it cut to like a flashback that just solved the mystery for you. Mm. It seemed a bit like you'd built up quite a considerable amount of suspense, actually. And now you've just like punctured it all in 1 5-minute segment. So, yeah, that was a little bit of an odd decision. That said, though, I did enjoy some aspects of this film, most of that being the landscape and the way that the landscape was portrayed. Mm. There's a lot of very beautiful shots of like snowy mountains and stuff like that. I think I read in one of the reviews that it's got the best skidooing action that you'll see in any film this decade.
What is skidooing?
That's the name for those electronic sledge things.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of like people racing around the mountains on those, which, you know, mm-hmm. you like that kind of thing, which I do. Mm-hmm. It's quite interesting. All of that is quite good. Some of the critics have gone into quite technical stuff about, because Taylor Sheridan directed this film as well as writing it, and I think it's his debut as a director, sort of saying that sometimes he's a little bit on the nose about it, like when the characters are arriving in the Native American reservation for the first time and there's a shot of the American flag flying upside down and it's all tattered.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. Basically being like, yeah, we get what you're trying to say, man. There's that, you know.
Yeah, totally.
I would say it's an interesting film. Like, I definitely found it thought-provoking. So I would maybe recommend it for that reason.
Yeah. I would say if you're going to see one Elizabeth Olsen movie in the coming months, make it Ingrid Goes West. And we'll talk about why, I'm sure, when it actually is released in the UK. But yeah. It was okay, right?
Yeah, it was okay. I'm going to go looking into this, but if anyone listening knows of any better depictions of this issue to do with Native American women or anything I can read about it, I would appreciate recommendations because I am really interested in it now.
That's true. And we'll tweet out the good things that we've read and put them in the show notes so that you can see some other perspectives on this movie. So last week, Theodore got in touch with a recommend for us, what he called a rather lovely piece of work by a Russian duo called I Am The Morning, an absolutely stunning mix of fragile vocals and deliciously complex instrumentation. And it's all about mental health. And I think the album is called Lighthouse, if I got that right, Caroline?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And yeah, so we listened to that for the very first time. What did you make of it, Caroline?
I absolutely loved it. It reminded me so much of an album I was really into a couple of years ago by a band called Bitter Ruin.
Bitter Ruin?
their album called Waves that came out in 2014, and they supported Amanda Palmer on tour, I think. Uh-huh. And there are a couple of songs on this I Am The Morning album that gave me the most intense deja vu, because I was like, this is exactly the same, very similar quality, sort of really like acrobatic female vocal and ethereal but also quite crunchy backing music. Yeah, it was really, really similar.
Oh, that's so cool.
It just took me right back. I don't know why. Like, I was very briefly but very intensely in love with that band, Bitter Ruin.
That's so nice. It's lovely when you get like a kind of sensory reminder of a different time in your life.
Yeah, it was really weird, actually. It doesn't happen very often. But yeah, so for that reason, and actually because I found this music to be really interesting, I've been super into it and listening to it every day.
No way. I couldn't get into it.
Really? It was interesting.
Yeah, it's just outside my comfort zone, and my music is such a weirdly personal thing, isn't it? And I could tell that there was a lot going on in there that was good, and that they were very talented, and it wasn't like I was sat there like, oh, this is rubbish. I just couldn't connect with it for whatever reason. And I don't listen to a lot of it didn't sound like anything I'd ever heard before. I don't listen to a lot of music like that. So yeah, for me it's probably not something that I'm ever gonna, you know, it's not like Anna of the North record we did a few weeks ago, which is something that just like is so my comfort zone and I just listen to nonstop. Yeah, so it wasn't that for me, but I'm really glad that it resonated with you.
Yeah, it really did, and I can't really precisely explain why. I think I always respond quite well to anytime I listen to something where I'm like, wow, that is good technical singing, and this is really, really impressive singing. But also, I don't know, it just has a,
it feels more classical and traditional, that kind of that kind of vocal, which you know more about than I do.
It is definitely shading into that side, which feeds into the little bit I've been able to read about this band. They are sort of, I think, what we'd call here a classical crossover act, in that they call themselves like progressive chamber music, in that they take some things from the progressive rock scene and other things from, like, you know, classical chamber music. They haven't, as far as I can tell, really had a proper release here. Or if they have, they certainly haven't been reviewed very widely or anything. I could only really find reviews on sort of like specialist websites that review a lot of progressive rock, that kind of thing.
Totally.
So yeah, they haven't really hit the mainstream, but in one sense that's good because it means you can listen to all their music for free on Bandcamp.
Yeah. We did have an email from someone called Florence who got in touch because they were just so pleased to hear that we were going to do I Am The Morning. And it's an interesting email, so I'll read it. So Florence said, "There's a growing band of women musicians on the prog scene that deserve a bit more attention from other music fans who like something a bit unusual. One of my favourites at the moment are a London trio called Beatrix Players. She's put amazingly, they just won Best New Band in the Prog Awards. Traditionally, it's a very male scene, so to win a reader's poll as a fairly unknown band is a pretty fantastic achievement. Their album Magnified is gorgeous, so if you're checking out I Am The Morning, then do give them a listen too." So I don't know, I just thought it was interesting to hear a bit more about a music scene that I just don't know anything about. And she ends her email with "more prog on, seriously please," and I'm like, no, but but thanks, Florence. That is, it's interesting.
We'll have to see how that goes. Yeah, I will check out that Magnified album that she recommends. That does sound like something I would also like, in that she later on in the email she says the influence of the Brontes and figures from history like Margaret of Anjou play a big part. It's like, yes, I'm interested in that.
Totally. Yeah, and that was the element of this record that appealed to me. Theo said, you know, there's Sylvia Plath in there and lots of mental health stuff in there, which did really interest me. But the thing with music is, even if all that stuff hits the right notes with you, if the music doesn't, for want of a better pun, it just doesn't.
Okay, well, a partially successful foray into prog then.
It's quite fun when we have one of the rare occasions where one of us likes something and the other one doesn't. That almost never happens, seriously. So thanks for making that happen, Theo.
Yeah, that's true.
So what about next week, Caroline? I feel like it's your turn to recommend me something. What's it going to be?
Yeah, so I've been wanting to recommend you this for ages, but then we've been doing like stupid AMA episodes and live episodes and stuff, so we haven't been keeping up with the regular schedule. So it's this podcast called Dissect that I am completely obsessed with. I've written a whole column about it already, and I'm still just like physically pressing it, if you can do that with a podcast, on every single person I meet. So it is a musical analysis podcast. If you are familiar with things like Song Exploder or Switched on Pop, it's kind of in that vein, in that it's, I think the host describes it as long form musical analysis. But what he's doing that maybe others aren't doing is he's looking at cultural context as well as like musical detail. And so the second series of it is coming out at the moment, and it's all devoted to a single Kanye West album, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. The first series was all about Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly, and it's sort of roughly structured like the album, and each episode has a particular focus on a different song that then allows him to look at a particular aspect. Basically, it's amazingly well made and well written.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere on his Patreon, he says that each episode takes him like 20 or more hours from sort of genesis to final product, which is incredible. So I know you are a Kanye fan, so I'm very keen to hear what you have to say about it.
I'm really excited, actually, because, I mean, seriously, listeners will know that we both really enjoy Song Exploder, which is something you recommended to me. I didn't know about it until you told me about it.
Incidentally, did you know Lorde has just been on it?
On Song Exploder?
Yes.
Oh, which song?
Sober.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I don't think I've like pressed download on a podcast so fast in a very long time.
Okay, I can't wait for that. That's so exciting. Yeah, I just really am excited for this particular recommend because, yeah, you've been always really good on recommending good podcasts to me. And as you say, I'm really interested in Kanye West. And I think he is someone who lends himself really well to long form discussion. And he's a rich text, that Kanye West, isn't he? So
Having listened to what I have of it, that is what emerges from it, is that after you've listened to this, not that you would anyway, but if anyone listens to this, there is no way they could ever like write off Kanye as like shallow or not totally. A serious musician ever again, you know?
Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you. Well, we'll return to it next week. Thanks for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
On seriouslypod.com, you'll find all our back episodes, including our specials on Harry Potter, Love Actually, and Friends.
We're also available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're seriouslypod on all of them.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've already discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
If you really enjoyed this episode, why not go to iTunes and give it a rating and a review? It helps other people to find the show.
And if you feel strongly that more pop culture needs to be taken seriously, spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.